You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Earth Station MCU podcast, your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, the Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so much more. Visit us at our Facebook group, Earth Station MCU, at earthstationmcu.wordpress.com, or email us at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. Hello, Marvel Universe! My name is Jennifer Hartshorn, and welcome to episode 21 of Earth Station MCU. It's been relatively quiet the last couple of weeks in terms of Marvel news, but we do have a few things to talk about, as well as our analysis and critique of the second half of Daredevil's first season. Before we get started, I'd like to remind all of you that listen on iTunes or Stitcher to please give us some love in the form of reviews, and to check out our Facebook group or our WordPress site, where you can leave feedback as well as joining in on the conversation about everything cool going on in the MCU. John and I are also active on a number of other Facebook groups, including Earth Station 1, Earth Station Who, Marvel Cinematic Universe, the other Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cosplayers, S.H.I.E.L.D. Level 7, and others. You can also reach us by email at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. All right, well, tonight, myself and Mr. John Rabin are joined by a fellow podcaster, Ariel Kasten of the Large Nerdron Collider podcast.
Hi there!
Hello!
Welcome!
Thank you!
So tell us a little bit about your podcast.
So my podcast, we just kind of take all of the geeky news in science and tech and television and whatever, and we just talk about it. Last week, we were super geeking out about E3, so
okay,
really cool. Whatever hits our fancy, and then we just BS about it for a while.
Okay, cool. And so like the name is because you're bringing all kinds of geekdom together.
Yes.
Basically. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Cool. All right. The news that came up just about 15 minutes before we were going to record was not super exciting, but apparently Marvel is talking to Beyonce about being in a film. So what do you guys think about that? Are there any roles that you think that she would be good for?
I just keep telling myself right now that they must know what they're doing. But I, you know, T'Challa actually has a sister. I think her name is Suri or Shuri. And there was a point in the comics where she actually took on the mantle of the Black Panther. So she could be, I want to say she could be in there as a minor role, but who knows with Beyonce.
Yeah.
Beyonce may want something bigger.
True.
I would have said originally that I wanted her to be Janet Van Dyne, but since that's not going to happen, obviously, I think she'd make a really good She-Hulk.
Oh, interesting. Huh. That would be very different.
She's just got that Amazonian build.
So. Yeah, she does. She does. That's very true. And, you know, obviously she's very, very athletic, you know, with all of her dancing, so...
My problem is I'm just not certain that she can act, but my only real basis for comparison is, Austin Powers and Goldmember, so.
Yeah, which was really not requiring heavy-duty lifting on the acting chops there,
right.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, this is very much a just complete theory that people are throwing out there anyway. She has not been signed to anything. And, you know, I have gotten so... I trust Marvel, you know, in terms of their casting. You know, Chris Hemsworth, who's that? Tom Hiddleston, that's a weird-sounding name. You know?
Yeah, Tom Hiddleston was somebody you were only familiar with if you watched a ton of British television.
Right, right. And I do watch a lot of British television, but I still hadn't heard of him.
Ah, well, you missed out on Wallander.
Oh, is that the one with Kenneth Branagh?
Yeah, where he's like Norwegian,
right,
Norwegian detective, and Hiddleston's actually in his precinct.
Oh, his so that would make sense for why Brenna would have wanted him for, because he already knew him from from that. Interesting.
And it went from there to Thor to Jaguar commercials.
yes, exactly. One other bit of news, and let me see. I told myself I was going to pronounce this right. Chiwetel Ejiofor, who is a British actor who's been in lots of things. He was the operative in Serenity. He had the lead in 12 Years a Slave. And I believe he has been cast in something, correct?
Indeed. He is going to be Doctor Strange's nemesis, Baron Mordo.
Ooh, cool. Yeah. So what can you tell us about that character?
It's kind of what you would think. He is Strange's opposite number. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes in the media, when you see him, he's usually kind of a lackey for a bigger bad extra-dimensional demon named Dormammu.
Okay. Well, he's a fantastic actor, obviously. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. Super versatile.
Very versatile. I was telling my mom, I went up to visit her in New Hampshire this last week, and I was talking with her about how most of the main characters in 12 Years a Slave were played by people who were British. And she's like, mm-hmm. That's not possible. They all sounded American. I'm like, well, that's because Brits are better doing American accents than Americans are doing British accents.
Yes. Sadly, this is true.
Unless you're David Tennant, and then you're not good at all.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, not everybody. Colin Salmon can't do an American accent. Like, if you watch Arrow, he starts off trying to do one. About three episodes in,
he just
completely forgets it. And then his character is British from then on.
Now, David Tennant's English accent, some people have picked on it. I guess I just don't have an ear for accents. It doesn't sound ridiculous to me, but some people have said that it is. So
it's just that's your standard for BBC TV
right.
accent.
Right.
It's what they call received pronunciation.
Exactly, an estuary accent.
Yes.
So anyway, that will be interesting. Obviously, we're getting quite a few names together now for Doctor Strange. I really will be interested to hear if that Tilda Swinton rumor ends up panning out at all, because that will be interesting if so. All right. So the other thing that we've seen several posts and articles and whatnot about in the last couple of weeks has been about Hulk. And, of course, at the end of Age of Ultron, he was in a plane going off who knows where. And as far as the cast lists and everything that have been released for Civil War, it has sounded up until very recently like he was not going to be in it. However, there have been some kind of weird things. Apparently, Robert Downey Jr. told him that he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's still nothing official. So, what do you guys think? Post credit scene, or is Downey just pulling his leg?
I feel like Downey is wishful thinking at this point. Maybe if he speaks it enough, it'll happen. I feel like the release of the movie is so close for Ruffalo not to have heard anything yet.
Yeah,
it's a little doubtful that he'll actually be in it. But you never know.
Yeah, and I certainly think that's possible. I would also say, you know, there have been rumors since, who plays General Ross?
William Hurt, yes.
That's it. I was confusing my Hurts. there's been rumors brewing since William Hurt joined the cast as General Ross.
He's a character from the Hulk film, so it would seem like it would make sense to have Hulk in there, right?
Yes, and there's also a fan theory that we're going to see the Red Hulk in there, who is an enemy of the Hulk, and I can't spoil too much for the people who haven't read the comics.
Fair enough.
But he is definitely an intriguing character, an intriguing villain for the Hulk, and there's possibility that he could end up on the on Tony's side.
Interesting.
Which would, you know, bring in possibly Green Hulk as being on Cap's side, and possibly ruining the whole science bros thing, but we'll see.
Well, and then the question there is, if you're going to have the Hulk, that doesn't mean you're going to have Banner necessarily, too. So even if the Hulk is in it, it could just be CGI.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just find it hard to believe that we would have the Hulk and not Banner.
Yeah. Or at least have Ruffalo doing the capture for the Hulk.
Right, right.
That's
definitely
what makes it so believable.
Now, one thing to clarify for those of us who are not super deep into the comics, Grey Hulk is another thing that has been mentioned before. Grey Hulk is just another version of Green Hulk, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're both Banner.
Right. Originally, what happened when the comics came out, they wanted to do him as gray.
Mm-hmm.
But that proved to be insanely difficult for the colorist.
Right.
So they switched over to green. And mm-hmm. later, he turns gray again. And that's when kind of when the different personalities of the Hulk start coming out. Like, Hulk has multiple personality disorder.
Oh, that's
and
handy.
When he goes gray, he becomes this kind of this...
he's a Hulk, but he's smart, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he's like a wise guy sort of character, calls mm-hmm. himself Mr. Fix-It.
Nice. Yeah, because there were a lot of people that were, you know, speculating, oh, did his eyes start to turn gray right at the end of that scene with him in the airplane? Because, you know, Hulk Smash, Green Hulk, probably would not have necessarily, from what we've seen before, wouldn't necessarily have the presence of mind to turn off a monitor. You know, he would just kind of smash.
Yeah.
But so some people were speculating that he was turning into Grey Hulk there, but who knows? There were also some articles that came out, a really good one in Forbes actually. Mm-hmm. And how trippy is it and awesome that Forbes publishes stuff about comic book movies?
Doesn't everybody know? I mean, this is the new mainstream.
It is. Yeah. It is. And, you know, Forbes was, you know, what my dad was reading when I was growing up. It was like the thing for middle-aged people who smoked cigars and had lots of money, you know? So it's just, it's neat. Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, Forbes has posted something about...
Yes.
About what the situation is with the rights, because I'll admit I was totally confused on that, because I knew that there had been issues because the Eric Bana one that came out first,
yeah,
like
that
in
was,
like 2002
back in
or 2000, something?
2003, that was Ang Lee directed, and it was just called Hulk.
Right, right.
And it's best forgotten.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. But then, but Marvel got the rights to it back because they didn't do anything with it for a couple of years or whatever. And so they were able to make Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And but then people have been saying that there's some kind of an issue with Paramount still having the rights to it. What it sounds like is that Paramount has first right of refusal on distribution.
Right.
But they wouldn't actually have any, like, creative control over it.
Yeah, Paramount Universal, they don't have the rights to the character, but they have the rights to be the one to distribute the film, and that's why we see more of Hulk in Avengers movies rather than a sequel to The Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. then that means, you know, Disney would have to give Paramount and Universal more money.
Right, right. And the article, I think, is good, because it explains about, you know, there's always the ongoing conflict about anytime someone, you know, says they want a Black Widow movie or a Hawkeye movie or a Hulk movie, you know, why people think that it can't necessarily carry it the same way that the other films will. But if you think about it, Hulk is about as effects intensive a
right.
movie as you can possibly have.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is also the similar situation that Marvel is in now with Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yes,
Marvel
right.
Marvel has Spider-Man back, but Sony, they still have to work with Sony on the films, and Sony distributes the films.
Right, right. Unless it's one of the team-up movies, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, if he's in Infinity War or do we know for sure if he's in Civil War or not? I don't think it's been...
No, we still haven't said anything.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one of the candidates, I think Smallwood was his
mm-hmm.
name,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He apparently posted some Instagram videos of himself doing flips that people have jumped on and think maybe he's the one who's got the role now if he's posting this stuff to show that he can do it.
Well, I think Asa Butterfield was confirmed as being out, right?
I don't know if he's been confirmed as being out. The kid that plays Carl on Walking Dead is the only one I've seen confirmed is not in the running.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know he was in the running at all. That's Chandler Riggs.
Yeah. I didn't even know he was being considered as well until he said he wasn't.
Well, I'm glad he's not being considered. I'm kind of hoping that Asa Butterfield's out of the running, too. I like him as an actor. I just don't think I'd like him as Spidey.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little too serious for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, who knows? You know, like I said, I have a ridiculous amount of faith in Marvel in terms of being able to pull things out of people that we never would have thought would be there. So, I mean, you know, let's look at Robert Downey Jr. You know, before Iron Man, he was, you know, that drunk, drugged out guy who's been in prison for the last 10 years. You know, who would have thought that he would end up carrying one of the biggest franchises ever?
Yeah. You know, and that just went back to his raw talent. Like, if you've seen seen his previous films before he went to prison,
right?
You know, he had all the potential there, and then he just fell into drugs and alcohol and got himself in trouble. Got clean, came out of it even better than before.
Now, was Tropic Thunder before or after Iron Man?
It was after.
It was after? Okay. Because that was the only other thing I could think of him being in from around that time.
He's just a dude playing another dude.
Man, that movie is just
brilliant.
Indeed. It's its own thing. But so what do you guys think? Do you think that there should be a solo Hulk movie? Do you think, you know, if you do, what kind of stuff do you think they should focus on, or what do you think? How about you, Ariel?
I don't know. I want a Hulk movie. I really like Mark Ruffalo's Hulk more than Ed Norton, which I never thought I would ever say, because I really liked Ed Norton as at least as Bruce Banner, if not as the Hulk.
Sure.
But with the history of how poorly those movies do, I'd hate for his character to kind of go downhill in a standalone. So I'm nervous about it if it were to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what they should focus on. Something other than the origin story, because that's been done and done and done again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if they do bring in the Gray Hulk, just something on that transition and how he harnesses his powers in a more effective way to be in control of himself to a degree.
Yeah, and that's something that the Forbes article brought up as well, is that it's one of these things, and as a fellow LARPer, Ariel, you'll understand this, but I mean it's true of everything genre. Every new season that comes out, you have to do something bigger. You have to make it something more earth-shattering. And when you're talking about going up against the Hulk, you can't just have some, you know, some crime lord or something. It's if you're gonna have a good face-off fight, it's got to be something pretty epic. And you know, if when you have something that is that epic, it makes you go, well, why aren't the other Avengers getting involved in this? You know, you know, you can have a Captain America movie where, you know, they're fighting something and you can believe that, you know, the other Avengers are on the other side of the world or haven't heard about it or whatever. But if it's going to be a challenge for the Hulk to take down, then it has to be pretty big. How about you, John? What do you think?
You know, we've still got Samuel Stearns out there. I mean, if you saw the Fury's big week, he's currently, well, he was locked up in S.H.I.E.L.D., so we don't know if after the whole Hydra thing, if he's one of the specials that got out and could terrorize things, but in the comics...
Do you mean Abomination, or are we talking
about Spence? I'm talking about Samuel Stearns. You
remember
the professor he went and saw.
Right. Yes.
In the comics, he's a villain called the Leader, who is as smart as the Hulk is strong.
Interesting.
And he's usually kind of a puppet master. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why I kind of hope the Red Hulk rumor is not true is so that we could have another Hulk movie with the Red Hulk as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe, you know, the leader pulling the strings or something, because the leader in the comics is also tied into the Red Hulk's origin.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it would be nice to be able to carry some things over from that pre-Mark Ruffalo movie. But yeah, the more that you can tie those in, the better, I think. Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I was very much one of the people going, oh, they should totally do a movie. But I got to admit, after I read that Forbes article and, you know, was looking at how much it costs to make something that is that super duper effects heavy, mm-hmm. and the fact that the last two Hulk movies have not performed really well at the box office, and just the challenges of, you know, how do you bring in something that is going to be tough enough, you know, to be a real fight against the Hulk. So, mm-hmm. and they also made the point that one of the things people have complained about is that there was too much Banner and not enough Hulk in the movies previously. And, you know, that's interesting. I remember seeing an interview with Ruffalo at one point where he said, you know, part of the challenge with this character is that Banner doesn't want to turn into the Hulk. And so you end up with your protagonist spending all of his time wanting to not do the one thing the audience wants to see.
Yeah.
So I think
I've changed my mind. If there's a solo Hulk movie, I want it to be him flying off to a remote island where that's undiscovered and coming across dinosaurs, and I want it to be the Hulk fighting dinosaurs.
That would be awesome. Do a Hulk Jurassic World crossover.
Yes.
I think there's precedence for it.
There probably is. And, you know, and people have talked about, what is it, Planet Hulk, where he goes somewhere in outer space and everything.
Yeah,
it's Planet Hulk essentially is born of the Illuminati in the Marvel Comics universe, which is several characters that aren't in the Marvel universe currently, including Reed Richards, mm-hmm. Charles Xavier.
Well, they're in the Marvel universe, but not MCU. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they're not in the MCU, mm-hmm. So it's a problem getting those two involved. But otherwise, is Black Panther, Namor. Well, Namor, who's also not in the Marvel mm-hmm. Cinematic Universe, he's still over at Fox as well. And Iron Man all decide that the Hulk is just too dangerous, and they trick him to get on a rocket and send him off into space, and he lands on this kind of gladiatorial world and ends up conquering.
Hmm, interesting.
That would be fun.
And then
the planet goes kablooey.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so one last thing. This is not MCU, but I know, Ariel, you had mentioned there's some casting news that you were not happy about that is Marvel-related.
Yes, so as we all know, X-Men Age of Apocalypse is the next X-Men movie, and I recently read that after that, there's going to be a spin-off Gambit movie.
Hmm.
Oh yeah, that's actually been in the works for a while, and I know where you're going with.
But in my brain, Channing Tatum who is cast as Gambit is too bulky to be Gambit. Like, okay. Gambit needs to be this scrawny little scrapper guy.
Yeah,
and I mean, I have over the past couple of years developed a new admiration for Channing Tatum's ability to act and his mm-hmm. comedic timing and things like that, but I just mm-hmm. I don't think he could carry a whole Gambit movie by himself. I just don't.
So who do you think would make a good Gambit?
I'm trying to remember his name. He played Sawyer on Lost.
Oh yeah.
Josh Holloway?
Yes, that's his name. Yeah.
I think he'd make an amazing Gambit. He's a little old, but he's got the right attitude and the right build.
I don't think Taylor Kirsch was that bad, but I mean, even though the rest of that movie was on so many levels.
Wolverine?
Hey, if Ryan Reynolds can come back and play Deadpool and do it right, I think Taylor Kirsch can come back and do Gambit right.
Hmm. Do you think Ryan Reynolds can play Deadpool right?
Hey, we're going to find out in February.
Fair enough.
If you haven't seen any of the videos he's done, like the one he did with Mario Lopez, it's absolutely hilarious, and I think he's going to finally redeem himself in my eyes after the giant stinking turd that was Green Lantern.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got one more thing if we've got time.
Sure, go ahead.
And it's actually related to Daredevil.
Okay.
Recently, Charlie Cox actually won an award for the annual Helen Keller Achievement Awards in New York City that are awarded by the American Foundation for the Blind.
Yeah.
Specifically for his portrayal as Matt Murdock.
That's really cool because, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, any time that you're dealing with any kind of disability or anything, it's a very, very careful tightrope that you have to walk. You know, because there are people that have that disability, that are blind. And, you know, I think it's a good point because this movie definitely showed, you know, all the different technologies that he was using to help him and everything. And
Foggy.
Yes. Karen.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things where he says he's been getting emails and letters from blind people,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of, this is what I've been going through in my life. And, you know, you don't expect that, I think, when you take on such a role that suddenly you're going to become
a role model. Yeah.
Yeah. The role model for people with that disability. And I think he's handling it amazingly well. And I think he deserved the award.
Yeah, again, Marvel, I got to give them credit. You know, the people that they're picking, with the exception of Jeremy Renner, in general, definitely.
Hey, just because he's, you know, he's a bro and he doesn't get the whole feminism thing. You know, he hasn't done a bad job as Hawkeye.
He's been fine as Hawkeye. But what I was going to say was they've picked people who are really good at working, at relating with the fans, and are really good ambassadors for the Marvel brand. And
then there's Renner.
And then there's Renner. Yeah.
I still like you, buddy, but just, yeah.
Just stop. Just don't talk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that about wraps us up for news. So we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be discussing the second half of the first season of Daredevil.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast. And on this show, we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks!
Welcome back, everybody, and now we are going to be talking about the second half of this first season of Daredevil, and it was amazing. I mean, the whole season, you know, it's got one of the highest ratings for any show on Rotten Tomatoes, and I was just absolutely blown away by it. In the first half, we were pretty much setting things up. There were different characters getting introduced. You were kind of learning about the world and everything. And it's really the second half where everything, where you get the most story, I think. So we've got different people who died in the second half. We've got the different character arcs for different characters. So what do you want to talk about, John?
You know, you talk about the character deaths. There were some surprising ones, I'll admit. I really thought Ben Urich was going to last and go through until the next series because mm-hmm. he's, you know, in the comics, he's a very big kind of secondary character in mm-hmm. Daredevil's universe. You know, in the comics, he eventually finds out that Matt's Daredevil
mm-hmm.
and ultimately decides not to publish a story about it because he feels like Hell's Kitchen needs Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so. And isn't he a large mover and shaker in The Punisher, and isn't Punisher coming to Daredevil?
I don't know if he doesn't really play as much of a role in The Punisher. The other character that he has a major relationship with is Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Because in the comics, Ben Urich is a writer for the Daily Bugle.
Oh.
Which at the time of this... the time they filmed this show, they couldn't use yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Ah, that would be interesting with Spidey going out to take pictures of Daredevil.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ben was, you know, that was definitely one that really really hurt. And it was a very emotional thing, but I can see why they did it. Because, you know, at that point we've seen Fisk, you know, kill people like, you know, the Russian guy with the car door and everything.
Right.
But you hadn't seen him kill somebody that we'd gotten attached to as a character that was like on the side of the good guys, really. And yeah. So that was pretty shocking, I agree. How about and it took me the longest time to learn the guy's name. Leland. I thought that he was going to keep going, right? Because it seemed like he was, you know, he was the second in command. And, you know, the whole thing where he's mm-hmm. talking with Karen and he's like, do you really think I would have put a loaded gun on the table? And it was like...
Don't you mean Wesley?
That's Wesley. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I mean, they both died. But...
Oh, yes. Yes, you are absolutely right. Yes, I meant, yes, Wesley. Yeah. And I know we'll talk about Leland in a minute too, but we talked last week a little bit about what people thought he was going to be doing. But anyway, yes, Wesley, I totally did not see that coming,
mm-hmm.
And that was interesting because I thought he was a secondary character, but he was so well written and well portrayed,
mm-hmm. and really likable. Honestly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Super mm-hmm. likable.
Affably evil, I think, is the term. And you know, he, of course, is also a secondary character in the comics and plays essentially the same role for the Kingpin. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, like, oh, I thought he was gonna survive. But and one of the things, though, about his death, I think, mm-hmm. really opens up. Who the heck is Karen Page? Where? You know, who's what has she been through?
Exactly. Yeah.
Seriously.
Because, you know, obviously she starts off as, you know, the sort of maiden in distress kind of thing with being mm-hmm. Framed for the guy's death and everything. But yeah, she's a good shot.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Does she have some kind of history? Just, you know, when she says she knows how to shoot a gun, has she just been out in the range? Because she doesn't act like she's ever killed somebody before.
She doesn't, but at the same time, they do allude to her having a lot of, like, history that people can't find out about through the later mm-hmm. episodes.
Yeah.
Like, if you knew who I was, you wouldn't like me sort of stuff. So, maybe she has shot a gun before and just really hates doing it,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
but has situationally been put there previously. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where they go with that, definitely. Is she a completely new character for the series? Not in the comics?
No, she's totally in the comics.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. So
she's
so
been in the comics since way back in the day. She originally started off as the secretary at Nelson Murdoch, like she does in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Then she and Matt have a romantic relationship. She ultimately leaves, decides to go off and become a star in Hollywood. That doesn't work out for her. She becomes one of those cautionary tales of goes out to become an actress and ends up in porn, ends up with a drug addiction.
Like you do, you know.
Yeah, and in Daredevil Rebirth, the storyline, she sells Matt's secret identity for a fix.
Oh my god.
And the Kingpin gets a hold of it and uses it to systematically ruin Matt's life.
But we don't know anything about her background either in the comics.
There's not really much of a background until that
until
turn
that
of
happens,
events.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I love that actress. You know, I was a huge fan of hers when she was on True Blood. Mm-hmm. And I love her to bits and, I was very glad to get her, to see her getting, work on something that is where she was able to really, you know, be more than just the secretary maiden in distress. She actually got to do a lot.
Yeah.
So, and obviously her relationship with Ben was very critical towards moving the plot forward, this season. So yeah, it'd be interesting. And Leland, who I actually mean Leland this time, that was another one, you know, where I knew that it was an established character. I'm trying to remember if it was, I think it was JP last week, John, who was talking about how that character has a secret identity in the comics.
Right. Yes. Leland Owsley also goes by the Owl. He has almost kind of like a Wolverine hair.
Uh-huh.
And he's another criminal figure.
Mm-hmm.
For Daredevil.
I think what people were suggesting last week was that it might be his son ends up doing that.
Yes, because he does mention the son a couple times during the series.
Yep.
And the son might be kind of ticked off that his dad was killed.
You think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, I stood up and I cheered when he died. I was so happy. I was like, please let him die. Please let him die. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, that actor always seems to die in things over cooking the books. sorry,
what
I had to make a Shawshank. I had to make a Shawshank reference in there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, not somebody who died, but going along with Leland and everything. What do you guys think of Madame Gao?
I think we're gonna see her again. You know, we saw in her drug business.
Mm-hmm.
The symbol on all those cocaine packets,
mm-hmm,
is the same symbol worn as a villain named Steel Serpent.
Ooh, okay.
Who is very connected to Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we've got Iron Fist coming up as another series. Yep.
And she hints that her home is much further away than China. She's able to speak multiple languages, and her blind workers have some kind of like religious devotion to her.
Yeah.
So the going fan theory is that she's a character from Iron Fist universe called Crane Mother, who's kind of like a sponsor to Steel Serpent, the bad guy.
And is she like alien or something?
She's kind of more mystical. It's a bit more like the Ancient Ones. So depending on what route they go there,
mm-hmm,
maybe.
Yeah, I had heard someone say maybe demonish, more like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Black Sky was a demon, wasn't he? The little kid that got killed?
We don't really find out what he is.
Okay.
I don't think he really has a counterpart in the comics.
I will say, Gao is my favorite character. I love her character. She is so efficient and smart and effervescent all at the same time. Like, I love her.
Yeah, I mean, although effervescent isn't really what I would say of her. I don't think of her as being, you know, particularly sparkly bubbly, but, you know,
her eyes.
Yes.
She is in a way, you know, the way like when she laughs and makes her comments.
Yes, definitely, mm-hmm, definitely. And, you know, kudos to the writers and the actors for that, you know, for having a character that only speaks like three lines in English, mm-hmm, in the whole thing. You know, that's pretty awesome to be able to pull that off as a minor character not speaking English, so.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's see, other interesting characters. Of course, we've talked about Claire, the night nurse, and how, mm-hmm, she's definitely going to be showing up in other shows because she is Luke Cage's girlfriend, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, so she's...
Before his relationship with Jessica, you know, he and Claire have a thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely he could show up in Jessica Jones, which... Yeah. Oh, that's a bit of news that we hadn't talked about. They took the AKA off the title, and it's now just Jessica Jones.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
I think that sounds a lot better.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously they wanted to call it Alias, but we already had a show called Alias. So,
Get J.J. Abrams to direct. It'll be okay.
Yeah, it'll be fine. That's okay. But yeah, so she's definitely going to be back, and I think that's great because she's Rosario Dawson is just awesome.
She, mm-hmm, is.
And that was a great character. And I think it's, you know, it's such a great thing, you know, that the way that Daredevil has just worked, the way that it's been this very gritty, realistic, street-level kind of a show.
Right.
There aren't any other superheroes that you see them having someone come in to actually stitch them up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having her character there brought a lot of humanity and realism to it.
Yeah, I also love how romantically how she didn't lose her head over him. She's like,
I know,
so smart about not having a relationship with him.
Yep. There was, I mean, they definitely had chemistry, but she's like, "You're gonna get yourself killed."
Yeah. I loved Melvin Potter. I loved his inclusion in it. I loved the actor's portrayal of him because Melvin is a guy, especially in the comics, with some mental issues.
And he's the guy who made the outfit?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You know, he would slip in the comics, he would slip into delusions where he believed he was an ancient Roman gladiator in the 21st century.
Wow.
And we see kind of the hints of the gladiator character in his workshop with the chess symbol they wore and the saw blades and other elements of that character. But it was really the kind of the portrayal of his mental issues,
mm-hmm.
and his, as he puts it, his confusion,
mm-hmm.
that I thought really made the character sympathetic. Because, you know, when Matt breaks into Parr's workshop, they have mm-hmm. a fight,
right?
And then it's kind of like he gets punched on the nose. It's kind of like, why'd you do that? And then that's when you find out the layers behind Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's willing to help Daredevil by building the suit in order to get Kingpin away from him and away from his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a great character. And, again, that was something that, you know, you could have gone for the stereotype of the, you know, crazy kind of, you know, mentally challenged guy. And they made it a really good character.
Yep.
I know there are. What do you guys think about the suit? Did you like the black suit or the red suit?
I like the red suit. Mm-hmm. The only thing I think it's missing is it needs a little logo somewhere.
A little logo?
Yeah, the little interlocking D's.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Either up in the chest like Affleck had, or maybe somewhere in the center. Just something just. It's just that tiny little thing that's just missing for me. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I love it.
Now, Potter did say that the suit still needed some work, so maybe it will continue to get upgrades and end up with the DD.
Oh, sure. And Daredevil was something that the press came up with, and that hadn't,
right.
that didn't happen until after he'd already made the suit and everything. But I love that they actually went through and explained, you know, that this part, you know, the black parts are more reinforced and the red parts might be able to turn a knife blade or maybe not. You know, it was very, you know, like, if you're actually talking about what Kevlar can do, mm-hmm. what different kinds of armor can do, so...
Right, and you put the stronger... you put the stronger protection in the areas that are more vital.
Mm-hmm, right.
Yeah.
What about any other characters that you guys particularly liked, or any of the main characters that you want to look at?
Another minor character that mm-hmm. I loved seeing in this was Turk.
Okay.
Turk, in the comics... Is he's like Daredevil's stoolie, okay?
Okay.
Daredevil, like, if Daredevil wants to know what's going on in Hell's Kitchen, he finds Turk, beats the crap out of him, and Turk tells him whatever he wants to know.
Right.
And in this, they actually made Turk a little bit more badass, because he's there in the first episode. Mm-hmm. He's the black guy that
the smuggling ring? Oh.
Yeah, the smuggling ring that Daredevil breaks up, and we see him again periodically throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at the very end, when he's being pursued by the FBI,
right.
who are about to come arrest him for his involvement in Kingpin's schemes.
Yeah. So what did you guys think after seeing so many major characters die? Did you think Kingpin was gonna die at the end there?
Oh, no.
No.
too important to Daredevil's mythos to go out so easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I thought the way that they did it in terms of, you know, having guys on the inside and everything was just perfect. It was, you know, again, it was so well timed and everything. You really could believe that this guy has just, you know, a limitless criminal empire here that can get things done.
And remember, he's got to have a trial, so we're probably going to see that in the next series.
Oh, yes. And of course, Vanessa, like I said in the first half, Vanessa was one of my favorite characters. And again, you know, it certainly looked like she was going to die for a while there.
Yep.
But then she comes back and she's got that wedding ring on her finger or engagement ring at the end. So she cannot be made to testify against him if they're married, which is handy.
Well, that's the problem, is she actually would have to be married. Engaged doesn't cut it.
Right, right. But if they get married before the trial.
True.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, in which case, it's a spousal, like in law, it's a spousal privilege.
Right, right.
Which means she can choose to testify against him if she wants to.
But she can't be compelled to, right.
Right.
Yep. So we can talk about, we've got a few minutes left here, about some of, like, just favorite episodes or favorite moments. I gotta say, I think my favorite episode in the whole thing was the Nelson versus Murdoch episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Because, again, that's something that you see in so many superhero movies, right? Is, you know, when people find out your secret identity. And
yeah.
I've never seen it handled like that, where the person was just so betrayed.
It's actually, I mean, I recently watched through all of Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens between Ollie and his best friend.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he finds out about it, it's like, I can't believe you hid this from me. What happened on that island?
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you. I'm quitting the job working for you. I'm mm-hmm. just, I'm out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Really, at some point that happens with Ollie and everybody in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I think his mom is maybe the only person who didn't have a freak out, even though she shot at him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just the, because, well, and in this case, it isn't even just you've been hiding your secret identity as a superhero.
Right.
You know, with him saying, you know, are you even blind? You know, has everything from the moment I met you been a lie? That was just very, mm-hmm. that was a big gut punch, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked Speak of the Devil.
Oh, yeah?
It is rare that a show makes me forget that their lead character cannot die.
Yes.
Because there are more episodes, and I really feared for Daredevil's life.
What happened in that one?
It's the one where he fights Nobu.
Okay.
And then at the end, Fisk beats him practically to death.
Right.
It's right,
right
before Nelson versus Murdoch. And just watching Fisk go all, you know, King Kong on him, just,
yeah.
I was like, he can't survive this. This is, he's been lacerated to death and now he's getting mm-hmm. beaten to death. He can't survive. Even though, you know, I know there are more episodes and all that, but I forgot in the moment.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, the fighting in this is just brutal, and one of the things that I enjoy so much about what Daredevil has done, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Agent Carter, and also Arrow and Flash to some degree, is having the fighting style be an extension of the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just like everyone knows Kung Fu and everyone does the same flying kicks and things like that. They mm-hmm. had a very distinctive fighting style for Fisk that was just, it was just sheer power. It was just beating the crap out of people. There were no fancy moves or anything. It was just pure strength and endurance. I was talking with Ariel while I was watching the last episode a couple hours ago, and when you have that long final fight between Daredevil and
mm-hmm.
Fisk, you know, it's impossible to tell if it's actually Charlie Cox because he has a mask on, right?
Right.
So, but when you think about it, in so many other fight scenes, if the person has long hair, there's a lot of flipping the hair around, and so you can't actually see the person's face and everything. But it certainly looked like it was Vincent D'Onofrio doing most of those stunts.
Yeah.
And I think he may have, if I read correctly.
Because it was just it, and I mean, we talked last episode about the hallway fight and everything, and just the way that they use fighting as a way of continuing to tell the story and to
yes.
get across the person's personality.
Yeah, I absolutely love how Daredevil starts off all martial arts, and then the more desperate he gets, the more pugilist he gets.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, like I was saying in that in the first episode where he's going up against the guys with the human trafficking ring. It's like he starts, like you said, he starts off fighting, you know, very martial arts and stuff like that. And then he realizes that this is a show in which if you punch someone, they don't go down to one punch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it's not like every other superhero movie ever where when you finally get a good punch in on somebody, they're down.
Unless you're Madame Gao, because she did just, you know.
Oh, that's true.
She did palm him across the room.
That is true. That is true. But, you know, yeah, you can sort of see a moment where he looks around and goes, I cannot take all these people. I got to start breaking arms, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I loved, in Speak of the Devil, one of the things I loved about the fight with Nobu was the further acknowledgement of the ninja group known as the Hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're, of course, they're another very big part of Daredevil. And we see and allude to them in Stick,
mm-hmm.
but as soon as Nobu puts on the kind of the Hand's red ninja outfit,
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh god,
it's on.
That opens the door for them to really come in the next series or beyond. But my favorite episode was really Daredevil, the
mm-hmm.
final one.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where I marathoned it straight through.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 1 o'clock.
You did 13 hours in a row?
Just about. I think I started episode 1 before I went to work in the morning.
Right,
I did the other 12.
That night.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I managed to get off early, and I went home and watched it all.
Mm-hmm.
But it was maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, I think it was. I think it really was 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was dead tired. I didn't want to go on. And like, but it's the last episode. He's gonna put on the outfit.
Yeah.
And the whole episode, it just kept me so pumped.
Yeah.
That I was able to stay up and finish, and it was so worth it, because that last battle between him and the Kingpin, where
mm-hmm.
he's in the Daredevil suit,
right,
was worth staying up for.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did a really good job of that too, of bringing in a bunch of the characters that you hadn't seen in like 6 episodes. You
mm-hmm.
know, like the corrupt cops, and then the one good guy cop that has the grandmother that they bring her cigars and stuff. You know, that they did a really good job of bringing it full circle. And, you know, for something that had 13 episodes, I think that, you know, if they hadn't gotten a second season, and that was by no means a sure thing. That was, you know, this is the first thing they've done on Netflix, and nobody knew how it was going to go. And I think that, you know, while obviously there are plot lines that we need to see resolved, mm-hmm. like Fisk and everything, it was a good, satisfying ending, I thought.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what are you guys looking forward to next year? Or next
Punisher.
Season, whenever that comes out. Yes. Uh-huh.
I'm looking forward to Shane whooping some butt.
Yes, yes. It was kind of sad because we had done all this talking about, now I'm forgetting his name. The guy who was, Jason Statham, right? That was,
yep.
that we thought was going to be Punisher. And we talked about that. And then by the time that I actually got the episode out, John Barenthal had been announced. I was like, don't. But yeah, I think he's gonna be fun. So John, tell us a little bit about what Punisher is like as a character.
All right, Punisher's origin basically is he is a war veteran.
Mm-hmm.
He comes home to spend time with his family. They're out for a picnic, and accidentally get caught in a mafia crossfire.
Mm, okay,
like his wife and his children. Essentially get shot up by accident during this mafia hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses his special forces training to basically have a war on crime.
Hmm. Okay.
Yes, we've had 3 Punisher movies now. The first one with Dolph Lundgren back
mm-hmm.
in the 80s that is essentially Punisher in name only.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the Thomas Jane film, which does slightly better, but decides to put Punisher in Florida for some reason.
Okay.
And then the Ray Stevenson movie, which is probably about the closest you're going to get to a good Punisher movie, in my opinion, or
mm-hmm.
at least an accurate Punisher movie. But, you know, since none of them did very well, the rights eventually went back to Marvel, which is why we get him in Series 2.
Right. So is he going to be an ally or an adversary, though?
He's probably going to be a bit of both, to be
okay.
honest. He and Daredevil have fought just as many times as they've fought together.
Okay.
Obviously, Frank Castle's more permanent approach to solving crime
right.
isn't something that sits well with Mr. Law and Order Daredevil.
Right. One of the best damn avocados in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, Daredevil, especially as we've seen over this series, over the season, has progressed from being willing to go that extra mile, being willing to cross that line, to someone who isn't.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the episode after Karen shoots the guy, Wesley, he has a conversation with her where they're talking about, you know, people fighting and everything, and he's like, you know, once someone does that, you can't come back from that or something,
right.
And she looks very uncomfortable.
And we see that conflict between him and Stick
when Stick
kills Black Sky.
Yep.
Especially after, you know, Matt was originally like, we're not going to do this. And then they get back to the apartment and Stick's like, oh yeah, I did it already.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to them bringing Stone in and possibly seeing some interaction between Daredevil and Stone, because I know they showed him at the end of that Stick episode.
So tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, he is also I can't remember the name of the group that they're part of, but Stick and Stone. Yeah, the Chase. Stick and Stone are both part of that. They stand kind of in opposition to the Hand, and it's the battle between the Chase and the Hand is essentially what they're alluding to in that episode. Prepare what they've been preparing Matt for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't think we'll necessarily see them in season two. But we could definitely see them down the line, and that could build to a very big conflict in Daredevil's life.
Yeah, I don't know that they'd introduce Stone with absolutely no plans to ever use him again.
Right,
right.
And I think he was Stick's favorite student, wasn't he? Stone, maybe?
Yeah, I guess so.
So there's,
you know,
there's definitely
I have to go back and dig up my Frank Miller comics to really look into that. But
yeah, so... So there's already a relationship there, and you know he's tied in with another character that we've seen.
Right.
So yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how much we see Claire, because you know she's going to have. I know she's scheduled to be in both Jessica Jones and blanking on it.
Luke Cage.
I think she's going to be in Luke Cage.
Thank you.
I'm
thank
not
you.
Sure if she's in Jessica Jones.
I think she was. They said that she was going to be in Jessica Jones.
Okay.
But she's definitely going to be in Luke Cage. So I'll be interested to see if she shows back up on Daredevil as well.
But I hope so.
Yeah, she's a really cool character. All right, cool. Well, normally we would do ratings and say, you know, how did you like this? But I don't know about you guys. I think looking at this half season as a whole, it's a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah,
definitely.
I agree.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah, especially, you know, because John and I review S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes all the time, and, you know, not every S.H.I.E.L.D. episode is a 5. In fact, not all of them are above a 4.
I wish they were all 5s. I've given maybe one or two out there,
exactly.
But not many.
Exactly. You know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is... Bless its heart, you know.
I want to believe.
Exactly. It has some great moments, and I love watching the show, but there's almost always at least one thing where I'm throwing my shoes at the TV and going, really? You did that? Really? That makes no sense.
Well, I don't get that upset about it.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, you know, I loved Agent Carter. I think that, you know, it may just be that the writers that they're choosing to work on these things work better in a more limited season format. You know, more like, 10 or 12 or 13 episodes, right, as opposed to, I don't know, how many is in a regular season? Like 25?
Usually, anywhere from 22 to 26.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that we see, especially with British shows, where you've got those small order seasons.
Right.
Everything's compact. If you're going to tell an overarching story, you don't have time really to dilly-dally into subplots and everything else like we see with Flash or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Arrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep everything self-contained.
Yeah. Yeah, so I love this. I'm really looking forward to Jessica Jones when that comes out. I'll be interested to see how they deal with David Tennant's character, because that will be very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, I guess that about wraps us up for this week. Ariel, can you tell us again where people can find you online and around?
Sure. You can find my podcast at www.largeneutroncollider.com. And then you can find us at Large Neutron Collider on like Facebook and G+, mm-hmm. and we're LNC_podcast on Twitter.
Cool, cool. And you're on iTunes and Stitcher as well, I believe.
We're on
right?
iTunes yep. and Stitcher, and we have a video series on YouTube that we're about to start back up.
Oh, sweet. Excellent. We'll definitely have to check that out. And John, why don't we tell the good folks where they can find you as well?
You can find me, usually all my British writings and musings are on Anguitopia.net and Tardistopia.net. My cosplay page is Agent Doctor, and I've noticed that there's definitely been an uptick in the membership, so all of you who listen and have been liking the page, I want to thank you, and I'm going to reward you shortly, hopefully, with more pics of my vision build.
Excellent, excellent. That is going to be awesome. I'm super psyched about that. All right, cool. Well, we'll be sticking with our more or less every other week-ish format for the rest of the summer, but our next episode will be coming up shortly after this one, and in that one we're going to be recapping Phase 2, which, of course, wraps up with Ant-Man, and looking forward to what's coming up during Marvel's Phase 3. And, of course, the week after that is Ant-Man. I can't believe it's coming up so soon. So thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.